Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. We have a very special show for today and tomorrow. So for the, and we're hoping, because we've got this done in advance, and we're going to be sending this to Red State Talk Radio, that they should be playing it tomorrow, but it all depends on what they actually have baked into the their programming, because they always have something there that will, you know, play if somehow we get denied service or what have you. So you'll hear a show of Red State on Red State Talk Radio that should be this show, but if you ever hear a show during this time frame that's not, then that's because they didn't have something baked in to automatically play. So anyway, so hopefully you'll actually hear this on Christmas, because we are actually going dark on Christmas just so that we can kind of focus on those important things, spiritual things that we need to focus on. And I hope you do the same. And so more importantly, if you find yourself and or anybody you know not really understanding the origins of Christmas, this is why we do this show. And so this way people can kind of look at this in a historical sense, academic. You can actually start going out and proving whether we're correct or not. But the fact of the matter is that when you start looking at things and you start, oh, okay, so that really did happen. Cromwell was really, wow. Anyway, we don't want to say bad, good, or what have you. People did what they thought was right, especially, hundreds of years ago. And we can easily analyze why people do things. But unless you see, the whole picture, it's hard to actually have accuracy with, that kind of analysis in determining whether somebody did something right or not. That being said, one of the things we want you to do is we want you to go and get involved in the petitions. As you know, we've got the petitions out on reclaimingtherepublic.org. Get involved. Get those things mailed out. If you want to do an electronic petition, by the way, go to Reclaiming the Republic petitions page. Go to the link, and right there you can see the link that'll take you to Bob Schultz's page where you can do the electronic submission. He's going to actually take care of all of the electronic submissions. He's going to hand carry them down to Congress to ensure that both houses have these petitions and these signatures. Now, as far as the NLA, if you want to work with other people and have, some group signings in different, locations in your community, then work with them, because they actually have other people that are willing to, either do shifts or what have you. But let's get out there. Let's take an opportunity to capitalize on, the day after Christmas sales and those types of things, when people are going to be out trying to exchange the stuff they didn't want or the things that got broken or weren't right or what have you. Okay, so get out there and get people to sign a group signature page. And that's out there on Red State, on Reclaiming the Republic petition page as well. We have everything out there. If you have any questions, let us know, and we will help you. Anyway, as you know, this is the only show that gives you the academic evidence and academic evidence-based solutions of what we need to do in fixing these problems. And so what we are also going to do in the next week, we usually do goal setting. And 9 times out of 10, I do goal setting after. What I want to do is we're going to run out of content, I think, or we're going to basically finish covering the resolutions So leading into New Year's, we're going to talk about how to set effective goals. That way, by New Year's Day, you'll already have thought about it, and you can hopefully create some really good effective goals in improving your success for this coming year. Now, what we really need to dive into, like I said, is Christmas and how we have Christmas as we understand it today. Now, I got to start off with the fact that the birth of Christ, supposedly Christmas is all about the birth of Christ. Well, there is no one out there that has ever made the assertion that Christ was born in December, in this time of year, this time of season. And just to be clear, most, if you look academically, you'll find that it either happened in the spring. Some people say it happened in the fall. I'll let those people debate the merits of which. The fact of the matter is, Christ was not born at this time of year. And so how is it that we got to this point of celebrating Christ at this point in time in the year? Now, the other thing I want you to understand is, you know, the old forms of paganism. You know, this worldly type religion where if you understand paganism, paganism has two major significant events that they recognize, and those are the winter and summer solstices. They also recognize the equinoxes, the vernal and autumn equinox. And so if you look at what these events are, these are solar events. And they, you know, I mean, if you look at what happens at Stonehenge, you will find that every rule, every year at Stonehenge, all of the rules that they have posted are violated. They all get broken. And, you know, people are naked, people are on top of the rocks and on top of the monuments or these stacked stones and or plates or whatever. I mean, people are doing drugs. A friend of mine sent me an email from his son who actually went, and I think it was in the late 90s or early 2000s when his son actually went up there. And as he was driving, before he even parked the car, because they have signs dictating the rules of behavior as you get, you know, for right there for Stonehenge. And he said that before he even got to park the car, he had seen every single one of those rules being broken. And then when he got to the actual Stonehenge for the event, it was basically like an orgy. There were people that were deliberately engaging in acts that are, you know, lewd, lascivious, and should have not been allowed or even tolerated in public. But anyway, I want you to understand the origins of this. And so every once in a while you hear me use the term Platonism, and I'm going to use Platonism here because I believe we need to recognize the origins of the concept on print, the concepts of communism that I call Platonism. And technically, the author, because the author has not had a hand in writing, the true author of communism is Satan. But anyway, what we want to do is we want to kind of give you what we call a macro view, and you can see how today, how Christmas is basically something that was mass manipulated by Platonists who wanted to get people into actually doing something supposedly in the name of Christ and actually doing something that is actually contrary. And so keep in mind, the new Platonist efforts, the new efforts of communism actually began in 1776 Germany when Adam Weishaupt created the Charter for the Illuminati. It was literally, and if you read it, and it's available now, if you read the charter, you will actually, you know, if this was just a conspiracy theory and it wasn't true, then that document wouldn't even exist. But it does. And so how is it that people that talk about the Illuminati and the charter for the Illuminati are conspiracy theorists that, you know, are out there that aren't talking about truth, and this is all concocted. See how it doesn't make sense? These things actually happened. That charter actually exists. So anyway, the Platonist effort was a direct contrast to what the framers were doing here in America, just to be clear. We were creating individual liberty so that everybody could choose for themselves how they wanted to live, whether they accepted Christ, and whether they lived by his commandments. And here in America, America was great because Americans were good, because Americans chose liberty over compulsion. However, in the South, that was different. And that's why if you look at the American history and the concept of George, I think it was Fitzhugh, the gentleman that was a scholar in the South in the 1830s, where he actually postulated the concept that even the poor whites should be enslaved because they would be treated better and they would have better opportunities if they were slaves. He believed, basically, he was a socialist, and he believed that all people needed to be, controlled. And that is the essence of communism, where you no longer have the opportunity to make decisions for yourself. Your liberty is gone. It doesn't exist. So anyway, this Platonist effort was a direct contrast to what the framers were doing here in America. And I just want you to have that picture. And when we come back, we're going to get into a lot more history to paint, what was really going on and what, paganism and Christmas that didn't exist, what was really going on. So we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
Okay, now just remember that Americans weren't all literate. I mean, there were plenty that were illiterate. There were plenty that, if you look at who fought in the Revolutionary War, there were plenty of men that had to sign X, and somebody had to account for that person that X was his signature. And so that was usually an officer, an educated man that, could vouch for and recognized who he was and so forth. And so there were a lot of people that were basically ill-informed and or easily convinced one way or another. However, most everybody was good. They were so good that there was these, you know, the burning of the witches in Salem. There were cases throughout the Republic where there was religious intolerance towards anybody that did not, you know, espouse, you know, the norm for the time. This is why Madison wrote his Remonstrance on Religion. This is why, you know, there was plenty of religions that were banned in America. Only Christian faiths, and in some cases, only recognized Christian faiths. The Puritans only recognized their faith. This is how the Baptist and other churches were formed from the Puritan community, because there would be somebody that would start deviating and pick up this twist on Puritanism, you know, the hellfire brimstone types of sermons and so forth that came and created the Baptist movement. And I think the guy's name was William something. Anyway, I'm just trying to give you a real good, you know, kind of lay of the land that the people were good, but they were, you know, to be honest, the people really weren't that well educated. They were educated on the Bible. They were educated on those types of things. Anyway, so let's move forward and let's basically kind of lay it out as a perceived good. For all of the Platonists did what they believed was necessary for setting the stage for future manipulation. You have to understand that once they started creating this apparatus, and you're going to understand that the media became a part of that apparatus. What parts of our society became a part of that apparatus? Government eventually started playing a big role. And as a matter of fact, even before here in America, government was playing a role regarding paganism and Christianity. This is why what we want to do is try to give you an accurate view or an accurate historic perspective of what is really important and what we should really be focusing on for this time of year and throughout the year. Or at least as accurate as one's filters can provide. Because unless you go out and do the research and you commit to finding the truth, you're probably, you know, and as a matter of fact, if you actually go and follow some of the things I'm going to tell you, you go, wow, okay, he's right. That really happened. Okay, so if those things really happened, and you know, it's kind of like setting up the dominoes. Once you knock one down, they'll all fall down if they're positioned right. And that's this is how it all laid out. And this is how we have Christmas the way we have Christmas. But deeper analysis and I believe common sense and logic will prevail. So let me attempt to give you what I'm going to encapsulate here is a view infusing Kenneth Cook's work. And I basically got Kenneth Cook's work online and, you know, started looking at how he basically laid out the history of Christmas or the history in our society, how Christmas came to be. And you'll find that in the early 17th century, a wave of religious reform changed. When is the 17th century? This is 1600s. This is when colonists were just coming to America. And how this religious reform changed the way Christmas was celebrated in Europe. This was during America's first religious awakening, and our move towards religious tolerance began. Remember this concept of becoming tolerant towards other religion? Well, that means that, you know, are we going to be tolerant towards these pagans? And paganism started creeping in to people. You can even see today in church, how is it the people that go to a Christian church completely embrace communism? I mean, how can a Christian believe that it is a moral thing to do to use government to take your property and give it to somebody else? How is that? I can't understand how anybody could quote unquote call themselves a Christian and say it is a moral thing to compel somebody to, you know, take from them and give to someone else. So we have to be very, very clear. When we're laying this out here, we want you to know that there were lots of things that were slowly moving, and the big deceiver, Satan, was, you know, massaging all of these different things to help create these changes in our paradigms. Again, if you start looking in Europe, there was this guy by the name of Oliver Cromwell, and his Puritan forces took over England in 1645. They vowed to rid England of decadence, and as a part of their effort, they canceled the winter holiday, the celebration of the winter solstice. And what was at that point in time beginning to be referred to as Christmas, or at least these ideas were starting to be planted. If anybody looked at the historic perspective and how most people were referring to it, it was a winter holiday to celebrate the changing of the shortening of days and the move towards the, you know, the days getting longer. In other words, a move towards summer and spring and life. Charles II was restored to the throne, and with him came the return of the proper winter wilding holiday. Keep in mind, this was a precursor to the Glorious Revolution in Britain. And that Glorious Revolution was literally all about individual liberty and individual freedom and individual sovereignty. And so when they, you know, had this Christmas restored, okay, so people were looking at, you know, hey, demanding that they have these individual rights, which means that those people who wanted to be pagan or celebrate pagan had, as Englishmen, the individual right to express themselves based on the Bill of Rights. Now, as we move forward with time, we start actually looking at the Pilgrims, who were English separatists who came to America in the 1620s. They were even more orthodox in their Puritan beliefs than Cromwell. I spoke about this on Thanksgiving and in the Thanksgiving broadcast, and how they too failed in their implementation of socialism and communalism. In other words, here was an organization that was Puritanistic, but they were so Puritanistic that they embraced collectivism. In other words, they actually turned away from individual liberty and actually compelled people to live by a common collective standard. You see how the hypocrisy, and they ended up recognizing through the tragedy of the commons and so forth, you know, that they had to abandon that paradigm. Anyway, the pagan version of Christmas was not a holiday at all in America, and it was more of a wilding where people just got drunk and they, you know, if you want to call it a party, but it was literally more of just drunk rioting and not very well fashioned, not very well organized. And from 1659 to 1681, the celebration of the pagan winter wilding or the winter holiday was outlawed in Boston because they didn't believe in drunken behavior. Again, you weren't free to be able to go get drunk. If you got drunk, then you could go to jail. Anyone exhibiting the winter holiday, the winter wilding, or what we call today the Christmas spirit, was fined 5 shillings. Anything that was exuding, whether it was drinking or, you know, behaving with Christmassy, you were actually fined. Now, look at Americans today. Look at rural America, because I see people that want to mandate that, you know, things are called Merry Christmas and so forth, because they believe and they've tied Christ to this ritual of setting up a tree and putting gifts under it for each other. If you look at the intent and the drive behind the point of giving, it is strictly a commercialized thought. The best gift that one can give, Now, if you're lazy and you have money, then it's just easy to give people money because it's an abundant resource and it means nothing to you. But if you truly love somebody, the best gift you can give them is a piece of yourself, your time, you know, your thoughts, and sharing you with them. I mean, come on, guys. How many times do you hear your wife? She, you know, they would rather just spend the time and talk and have that time with you. That is the best gift you can give any person that you love. Anyway, we're at a heartbreak. We will come right back after this. And so we are getting more into the American history, but please, this is not kicking Santa Claus. This is all about what we're celebrating and how to really make this about Christ. So we will be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, so we're still kind of meandering here historically regarding Christmas and what it all meant. And like I just said, that anybody exhibiting this winter or Christmas spirit was fined 5 shillings. In contrast, down in the Jamestown settlement in Virginia, Captain John Smith reported that the pagan Christmas was enjoyed by all and passed, quote, without incident, close quote. So the tolerance in America was obviously vastly different. And as a matter of fact, as you realize down the road, where Christmas was being embraced throughout the United States, you'll notice that the slave states, for some reason, were quick to, you know, get on board with this newfound holiday and this newfound spirit. Just pointing that out, and we'll get to that as it comes out. After the American Revolution, English customs fell out of favor, including the pagan Christmas, because that came from England, which actually came from Europe. The pagan infiltration was a part of, you know, William and, you know, the French and all of the different influences that were basically permeating into England. And you got to understand, as England became the dominant power, the empire of the world, what was that, 1602, or when the Armada, Spanish Armada, was defeated? England then had to become quasi-tolerant of the rest of the world's paradigms because they didn't want to be too tyrannical to be overthrown. So, again, after the American Revolution, Christmas fell out of flavor, including the pagan Christmas. In fact, Christmas was in session, or I should say Congress, I'm sorry, Congress was in session on December 25th, 1789, the very first session of Congress. In other words, the very first Christmas under this new Constitution, or I should say the 25th of December, we did not even recognize. I mean, it wasn't even a glimmer in our eye. We were more focused on what the good Lord had bestowed upon us and what we were, you know, needing to do in, you know, in securing our liberties, because we had France, Britain, and all these other nations that were already harassing us and wanting to get paid and so forth. There was no wilding or lewd and lascivious behavior. Christmas wasn't declared a federal holiday, folks. Now listen to this. It wasn't even declared a federal holiday until June 26, 1870. Almost a century later. That's how long it took for America to start embracing this thing called Christmas. It had nothing to do with Christianity. In the very beginning, it had nothing to do with Christianity. And so, because again, the claim was, oh, well, this is when Christ was born. Well, everybody knew he wasn't born then. Anyway, up to this point, Christmas was recognized again, and I have to emphasize this, at the signing of the Constitution, it was recognized as a pagan holiday and not a Christian event. It had no association whatsoever with Christ or his birth. In the 19th century, some Americans began to embrace the pagan Christmas. And so that's the 1800s, the 19th century. Elitists basically started injecting and, what I will say, innovating this concept of the winter wilding into a Christian, something harmonious with Christianity, and changed it from a loud and rowdy carnival holiday into a family-centered day of peace and nostalgia. Now, is there any evidence to this? And absolutely there is. What actually happened in the early 1800s that should pique everybody's interest into the making of a Christmas holiday is this. The end of the 18th century was the beginning of a class conflict and turmoil in Europe. The French Revolution in 1790s was a result of this, and this sentiment began leaching into the American culture. What is that sentiment? Communism. The French Revolution was the first communist revolution. It came from the communes of France. And it was about collectivism. The reason the communists failed is because of a guy, a despot, a tyrant by the name of Napoleon Bonaparte. And he rose up using demagoguery and took over the revolution and then took control of France. In the early 19th century, unemployment was high and gang rioting by the disenchanted classes often occurred during what we call the winter seasons. Why? Because the abundance of food, you couldn't go out and forage an apple or forage berries. If you look at when things are harvested throughout the season, you know, the highly perishable stuff become available early on in spring. And the things that, you know, throughout the summer, those are usually the fruits and the berries and that type of stuff. And then the stuff that you can actually preserve to, you know, get through a long winter, potatoes and squashes and those types of things that take a long time to grow and for them to, you know, mature for harvesting. And of course, if you understood the traditions, one of the things that was a staple in their day was whiskey, because It was a grain beverage that had some nutrients to it. And it was same thing with apple cider. These things were harvested at the end of the harvest year. And so hard cider, distilled liquors, brews, and so forth were actually captured so that it would get them through the winter months. Well, what happens when you're drinking whiskey? Well, okay. And John Adams would have a glass of hard apple cider almost every morning. It was a staple of life. It was actually considered a staple. I'm not kidding. I mean, it was an essential part of a person's diet. Well, you had to have that. Anyway, when you start looking at how they were living and how they didn't have refrigeration. That's why they had to distill liquors and juices. Having fresh juice was nice, and it was a privilege in the summertime and through the spring to the early fall. But after that, anything, if you were going to have apple juice in the middle of December, January, what have you, it had to be distilled and or fermented like wine. Anyway, so as you start looking at how all of this was going on and the fact that there were people that were moving to the city that weren't growing their own food, and because they didn't have steady income, they couldn't feed to pay themselves. And so the only thing that they had that was the staple for survival were the distilled liquors or what have you. Many of these people were, undernourished, but at least they had their booze. And so that's, what ended up becoming more and more prevalent as people were leaving and moving away from the farm or the agrarian society and moving into the factories or into the cities, services, and so forth. So anyway, if you started looking at the Americans and what they liked to call this time of year, it was really the winter wilding. In 1828, the New York City Council instituted, check these facts out, the New York Council instituted the city's first police force in response to a winter holiday. That holiday was a winter wilding, and the books today actually reflect Christmas. So in other words, they rewrote history to basically say it was a Christmas riot or a Christmas holiday. Even before this, in the 1820s or the end of the 1820s, elitists were being harassed, and this galvanized the elitist intent to begin changing. Why were the elite? Because they had the money. People would see the person that had a carriage and a driver, those people in New York and in the cities, and they'd say, hey, that person has money. And they would harass them. They would go after them. They would try, and what these people would do to get away is they'd throw some coins out on the floor, and those people would go and dive on the coins, and they would have their getaway. They weren't happy with the fact that they had to do that they had to constantly save themselves by throwing coins out into the crowd. And so what was going on is the elitists were actually, their sentiments were becoming so soured by these people who didn't have the means. And it's not like they were trying to help them. You know, the old concept, if you teach a man to fish, you've fed him for life. But if you give him a fish, you've only fed him for the day. And that's what these people were doing. They were only giving them fish or coins to feed them for the day, but they weren't really trying to help them. So what they wanted to do, instead of going down that path of helping them and letting them compete in the market with them for whatever they were doing, they went down this path of basically changing the paradigm of this winter wilding into something that changed the spirit and tone of the winter wilding holiday. They recognized that paganism was not, doing well with them and their lifestyle. And so what they wanted to do again in America, or more aptly stated, to change the behavior of the growing interest in this wilding time of year as more and more people moved away from the agrarian society means that there were more people harassing them. So we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so New York actually had such a bad riotous Christmas in 1828 that they instituted the first police force. And so as we kind of put things into perspective, this was really driven by the taxpayers who were paying a lot of the tax because the squeaky wheel gets the oil, right? Okay, so in 1819, this is 10 years almost before that winter wilding, a guy by the name of Washington Irving wrote the sketchbook of Jeffrey Crayon, Gentleman. This series of stories about the celebration of Christmas in an English manor house began shifting the paradigm. And this was all actually make to believe. There was no truth to this. The stories about an English squire who invited peasants into his home for the holiday, in contrast to the problems faced in the Western society regarding the two different classes of the poor and those who had money, it basically started mingling the two groups, or at least as perceived in Washington Irving's books, that the two were able to mingle effortlessly because the squire would be open and having them come in and sharing the spirit of giving and compassion and those types of things. In Irving's mind, Christmas was a peaceful, warm-hearted holiday bringing groups across the lines of wealth or social status together. In Irving's quote-unquote fictional celebrations, the disparate classes enjoyed what we imagined were ancient customs. Did I tell you that these were all made up? There was no person whatsoever that did any of these things. To be clear, Irving's book series, his book series was not based on any holiday celebration he had ever attended. In fact, historians say that Irving's accounts actually, quote-unquote, invented the tradition by implying that it described the true customs of the season. In other words, they had created a scenario that they started to implant and integrate into everybody's paradigm. The early 19th century was also the beginning of the Second Awakening in America. If you understand the Second Awakening, this is when the evangelical faith was beginning as the Republic was beginning to enjoy peace from the end of the American Revolution, you know, the War of 1812. That was when the American Revolution was truly ended. The technical end of the revolution came by the Treaty of Ghent signed in 1814. So Irving was spot on in 1819, starting to introduce something that people, now we don't have these enemies anymore, or the threat of being invaded by this world empire or emperor. Anyway, so now they just wanted, okay, now we're left to our own design. What are we going to do? And they started recognizing that the pagan holiday was starting to grow more and more because there were more and more people that were living hand to mouth through the wintertime when there was less work. And they weren't willing to do the snow shoveling, snow removal, or the hard winter work. You know, they were willing to do, you know, things that were available to do in the summertime. As a matter of fact, I know today that there are people that work as a lifeguard, you know, Coney Island or what have you, or even California. And then when they lose their work on the official beaches, they literally collect unemployment for the next 6 months until they can work again as a lifeguard. They're happy with living that type of lifestyle and gaming the system. There's many people that just want to game the system because as long as the game exists, it invites people to play. This is how evil these types of social programs are. Anyway, as you also start looking at the evangelical faith, that was one of the times where evangelical faiths were starting to decimate communities because the troop would go into the town and they would perform these miracles with this snake oil, and then people would give their money and then the troop would leave. And then when the money left and hard times befell upon somebody, they'd go to their pastor and go, "Hey, we need some help." Well, you didn't give him the money. You gave the money to the people that just left town. And so the towns were being decimated by these performing troops that were basically, you know, used car salesmen or carpetbaggers. Anyway, as we move on and we start really looking more at, you know, the abolition movement, which was becoming more and more entrenched, and the former president, John Quincy Adams, dedicated the rest of his political career after being ousted as president to serve in the U.S. Senate to fight slavery and slavery's new political protector, the Democratic Party. As such, the North and the South were divided on the slavery issue and even on the issue of Christmas. Remember, I said this before. Many Northerners saw sin in the celebration of the winter wilding. To these people, the different celebrations of Thanksgiving, or I should say because you got to remember, Thanksgiving celebrations were very localized, you know, celebrating the pilgrims or the, you know, the other different companies that came, or celebrating the real national one that George Washington instituted. In the South, Christmas was an important part of the social season. Not surprisingly, the first three states to make Christmas a legal holiday were in the South: Alabama in 1836, Louisiana, and Arkansas in 1838. Slowly, the new concept of this noble thing called Christmas began to grow. In the years after the Civil War, Christmas traditions spread across the country. Children's books played an important role in helping indoctrinate children and the next generation of Americans the customs of celebrating Christmas, what the signs, what the holly, what the trees, and all of these things that are becoming tradition that weren't tradition, so that people would start understanding the point of trimming trees and lighting them and the gifts delivered by Santa, free gifts. Well, the concept was all about commercialism, you know, just giving away gifts for somebody to get something. How does that have anything to do with recognizing Christ and his birth and what he came to do? This was truly an indoctrination and a manipulation. And I just, you know, that's the whole point of what we're trying to do here. And let me see, I got about 3.5 minutes to kind of do this all up. Sunday school classes encouraged the celebration of the new Christian version of Christmas. Women's magazines were important in suggesting ways to decorate for the holidays, as well as how to make these decorations. And guess what? Sears and Roebuck and catalogs like that were more than happy to offer types of, you know, trinkets and paraphernalia for helping your holiday festivities. The children's playbooks, or these books, played an important role in spreading the customs of celebrating Christmas, especially the tradition of trim trees and the gifts, again, delivered by Santa Claus. Store catalogs, as I said, promoted these sales. At this time, literature and the progressive press had begun to congeal in manipulating social efforts, because what they were trying to do was to keep the poor from harassing and ravaging the well-to-do. And President Ulysses Grant basically declared Christmas a legal holiday in 1870. The bill to make Christmas a holiday was introduced into the House of Representatives by Representative Burton Clancy Cook of Illinois. It was approved and passed to the Senate on June 24th, 1870, when both houses had agreed on the wording and passed it. Now, what you need to do is you actually need to read that act. I don't have time to do it, but you will notice that it has no spirituality to it, unlike the act that was called for Thanksgiving in the very first session of Congress and George Washington's proclamation. In contrasting, I am telling you that America's true sacred holiday is Thanksgiving. Christmas has been a concocted mechanism of getting people to spend as much disposable income as they possibly can to help grow corporate rats' pockets, wallets, and so forth. What I ask, because we've got basically 1 minute left, Christmas and Christians are supposed to center their life on Christ. You're not centering your life on Christ by cleaning out your account and or going into hawk and giving your loved ones gifts, monetary gifts, or gifts of physical things. I know that the best thing you can do is to actually try to give a quality and substantive time of yourself, advices, sit down and write your true feelings about how you love your wife or your husband and the importance of your relationship with Christ. Make it about Christ. Shoot, one of the things we started doing when my kids were little is we tried to have a birthday cake for Christ on Christmas, because that was supposedly what we were trying to do. What we have to do is we have to, because any time we center our life on Christ is a good time. And I truly believe that if we do things right instead of doing things, or we do the right thing instead of doing things that they want us to do right, in other words, doing what they want us to do, then I believe that we will be blessed, we will grow, and we will have a much stronger family bond. Don't allow the pressures of society to overwhelm you. That is the real problem about Christmas. This should be about Christ, nothing else. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're here to reclaim the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.